Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to get started. Unfortunately, Mr. Kane had something come up unexpectedly, and normally we have Commissioner Kapatis kind of filling in, but something unfortunately came up with him. So Kelly Clark, our Plan C, has graciously agreed to chair in their absence. So I'll kick it over to our interim chair, Kelly Clark.
Great. Thank you, Joe. And let's see. Thank you and welcome. And thank you to members of the board who are joining us here today. For the record, my name is Kelly Clark, stepping in as interim to chair today's State Workforce Innovation Board meeting. Some quick notes. As we begin the meeting, so this meeting is being recorded. Before speaking, please state your name so that the transcription services can accurately document today's meeting. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board. It is open to the public and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91A. Meeting materials for the board and the public can be found by visiting the New Hampshire Works webpage. Again, today's meeting is being recorded. We do have a number of items to work through today. You will find these items on the agenda with their enclosed supporting documents. The agenda and these documents have been provided to the board electronically last week. Printed copies are also available here today, and all materials were made available to the public via the New Hampshire Works website. So, Joe, would you now please call the roll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Alberts.
Here.
Thank you. Jim Alden.
Here.
Thank you. Joseph Alexander. Kevin Avard. Rick Bartle.
Here.
Thank you. Christine Brennan.
Here.
Thank you. Joe Brown.
Here.
Thank you. Anya Brzezinski. Kelly Clark.
Here.
Thank you. Kenneth Clinton.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Kapatis. Not here. Bruce Crocheter.
Here.
Thank you. Mary Crowley.
Here.
Thank you. Tyler Eaton. Patrick Fall. George Hansel. John Hennessy. Michael Kane is not here. Cindy Harrington.
Here.
Shane Long. Donnelly Lozo. Lori Ann Lundgren.
Here.
Thank you. Larry Major. Adam Crapo.
Here.
Ashok Patel. Jim Prue.
Here.
Thank you. Shannon Reed.
Here.
Thank you. Tim Sink.
Here.
Thank you. Gary Thomas. Justin Cantor.
Here.
Thank you. Candace Hyde.
Here.
Is there anybody present who I did not call? Oh, welcome to our newest board member, Lisa Hinson-Hatz. Lisa, are you here?
I am.
Very good. Perfect attendance. Madam Chair, with the roll call completed, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you. So we'll now move to item 1B, which is the meeting minutes from the October meeting, and they are found in your packet. If there are no edits, I will accept a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the October 18th meeting.
Motion
made. Second?
Second.
Second. And Mike Albert. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. So we're going to move to the public comments section. So we'd like to take a moment to see if anyone from the public would like to provide any public comment. If so, please state your name for the record prior to speaking. I do not see any public comments, so we'll move to the next item. So informational items. For the record, again, this is Kelly Clark. I'm chairing the meeting on an interim basis. We start our agenda here today with some informational items. So these are reports and updates provided to the board. These do not request a vote. However, if board members would like to make motions, I would ask that you please wait until the next section on our agenda where we have time for motions. Please remember before speaking to please state your name for the recording. And Joe, could you walk us through these items?
Absolutely. So we're going to start on page 73 of the packet, item 2A. It's an informational item from our partners at the New Hampshire Department of Education, Bureau of Adult Education. They are one of our core partners with Workforce Information Opportunity Act funding, WIOA funding. This item serves largely to fulfill a federal noticing requirement. Again, always trying to stay in compliance. Ultimately, the review committee will see some paper from the Bureau of Adult Education to provide feedback and review before they award some contracts down the line. So largely, this is informational for those who are on the review committee, which again, thank you all who are members of that. So we will work through that when it comes. We're looking at probably, we've been told by our friends at the Bureau of Adult Ed that we should have those documents by March and April. So we'll be contacting members of that committee well ahead of time to plan things out. And then the committee will report back to the board at the June meeting. And I'm happy to entertain any questions if there are any. And again, there's a lot in there in that page or two of information. So I'm happy to entertain a question if there are any. Yeah, we're cruising.
We're moving.
item 2B, I'm going to invite Jimmy Hinson from staff to come up and give a rapid response update.
Thank you for not throwing anything at me on the way up. My name is Jimmy Hinson. I'm the Office of Workforce Opportunity, State of New Hampshire Dislocated Worker Unit Administrator. As we transitioned into the second and third quarter of this year, we did see an uptick in rapid responses around the state. We documented 16 rapid responses, which means we documented either a closure or a layoff. That's double of what we had this time last year. The good news is, of these 16 rapid responses, it only affected 648 people, which is a lot less than what we had before with the same number. All of our rapid responses are offered in person. Unless there is a need to do it virtually. We did have two Department of Economic Development new hires, and we were able to train them on rapid response and facilitating, and provided them with a copy of the rapid response standard operating procedure. We're in the process of working with them out in the field to get them up to speed. That's the official report. Now, what I need to go over next is, when I put things into the official report, these are things that have been closed, and they're 100% fact. However, right now, we are dealing with 9 rapid responses that are potentially pending. One has made the news, the Bed Bath & Beyond in Keene is closing. We've already ensured that all of the full-time staff have already gotten new jobs in the area, and we're working with part-time staff. Trying to coach them into our dislocated worker program so they can get upskilled training. That final report is pending. The other one that you may have heard about was the Hunter Shop and Save in Wolfboro that burned to the ground. That affected 70 employees. At this point, we have a Division of Economic Development staff member working with the owner. Everybody is currently being paid. At some point, that is going to change. It's our understanding they are going to rebuild, But that's not going to happen until probably the spring or summer of 2024. So with that case, they're looking at keeping 35 of their staff on board, and then of course people who are part-time will be working with them at some point. But we're kind of keeping a close eye, so if anybody's going to be filing for unemployment, we're going to be talking with them before that happens. This coming February 14th, happy Valentine's Day, Elbit is laying off 20 to 25 people. This is to be kept quiet. They do not know about this. The announcement's going to be made Thursday. And we're going to, since it's a secure facility, we're going to be doing this off-site at one of our NH Works office located in Nashua. We put together a flyer, we presented it to them, and we'll be taking care of that on Tuesday. We have a school specialty company. They package stuff and then they send it to various different schools. Their building was sold. They're going to use this as a time to consolidate. As a result, 70 people will be displaced in December of this year. We're working with them to make sure that we want to be able to, as they close, get all 70 people jobs before they close. That's going to be our goal with this one. The Concord Regional Cinema, we still don't know how many employees they have, because I can literally walk in there and go sit down and I see nobody. But they are closing. They're part of a reorganization. We're thinking maybe 3 to 5 at the most. A manufacturer in Nashua laid off one employee and will be laying off another 5 on March 31st. The production line that they're working is just coming to an end. Then we have a medical company that we are currently working with in conjunction with our DED team, with New Hampshire Works, NHES, and we're providing services to hope that we can prevent the layoff of 126 people. When they first came to us, they were saying that because of Medicaid or Medicare reimbursements, it was costing them more to provide the service. So if they can get different loans, they can keep it going. If they can't, they'll have to consolidate. So we're doing everything we can to minimize the impact at this point. PillPack layoff, this is a rumor. We can't find anybody in the state that has been filing for unemployment. It is tied to the 18,000 that they were saying that we're going to lay off nationwide through Amazon, but Amazon has, of course, been unresponsive. We'll keep checking on that. And the last one, that's why I have the earbud in the ear. I don't want to be, you know, rude, but we have a company that called us this morning saying that they were going to be laying off 25 plus. They were very cryptic. We left the message, and they just haven't called us back. So all of those are ongoing. So if you put the number 18 with an additional 9, you can see that there is it's picking up. So I'm expecting the first quarter to continue in this manner. And luckily, the DED has a full team that can help work with us, as well as we've provided training for all new rapid response team members in the form of videos that kind of go over how to prepare. And that's my report.
Thank you. Any
questions? Yes, ma'am.
Lori Lundergan. So when it comes to the PillPack, if we know what's going on there, or we know people who are affected by
yes.
what the plan is that something that you want us to talk
absolutely.
To
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't care where we get the information from, mm-hmm. and that's why I don't even mind dealing with rumors. I'd rather respond, mm-hmm. because I would say most of the time we hear from people who know somebody who literally got a pink slip,
okay.
and that is confirming for me to okay. be able to talk to them. So yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Shannon Reed. You mentioned that the new members of the Rapid Response team watch a video to kind of orient them as to what's expected. Is that something that we could see?
Yeah.
Is it on this web page that's referenced on your...
No, it's basically because I have 12 different offices located throughout the state, I could have 12 different team members, multiply that by 6. So what I did is I did little videos for each agency, and I'd be more than happy to share that with you. It basically reaffirms that I want them to know their programs inside and out. I want to make sure that they understand that by the time they talk to people about our services, they stick around. So for example, like with Vocational Rehabilitation New Hampshire, not everybody wants to bring up their disabilities. Or with Health and Human Services, nobody wants to bring up their health problems. So by sticking around, we ensure that they'll come and talk to us one-on-one. So I just give little tidbits, 18 years worth of experience. But I can get that to Melissa, and Joe can screen it to make sure I didn't say something inappropriate, and you can get it out to your group.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Additional questions? All right. Thank you so much for the thorough report.
Thank you.
So I guess let's move to the financial update.
Yeah. And we're going to kick it over to Nora for a financial update.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nora Noble-Christoff, the fiscal administrator for the Office of Workforce Opportunity. So just a little background. I know some of you have heard this before, but WIOLA Title I grants are awarded for one program year and then carried forward for two additional years. At the end of the 3 years, all funds must be expended or otherwise returned to the U.S. Department of Labor. And at the end of the first program year, we have to have at least 80% of the funds in the three programs obligated. So we do have four grants open currently, or program years, which is unusual. We got an extension for QI-19 for the end of June of 2023, and we expended all those funds. We mainly got the extension for discretionary, and by the end of this quarter, 100% has been spent. So we are done with that, and next week we'll officially close that grant out. For PY20, 87% has been spent, and it looks like by the end of June, when it closes out, 2023, that most of it will be spent. We have a few programs in the work. You can kind of see in the other pages where there's charts that most of the money that remaining for that is the discretionary funds. So we're working on ways to spend that by the end of June. Moving on to PY21, we spent 43%, and that's pretty good for kind of this year-end cycle, for close, roughly 50%. And compared to quarter one to quarter two, we're actually getting into PY2022 money now. We've only spent about 2%, but I see in quarter three that a lot of the funding will be moving over there for expenditures, and I'm hoping that that will kind of tick up to about 20% by the end of next quarter. But if you go onto the other pages, it kind of shows a little bit more of where we're spending mostly. Some of where we're kind of lagging behind is some admin expenses, but that might change a bit in the future, so hopefully we won't see that. And then discretionary, and as we mentioned, there's a few programs in the works to help set that down. But if you have any questions, please let me know.
Seeing no questions, shall we move to the next item?
Absolutely.
Which is the year-end program performance.
So for item 2D, kick it over to Lisa Gerard.
Hi, Lisa Gerard, Office of Workforce Opportunity, WIOA Program Administrator. So some of these items are year-end items because in June we were in a backlog. Our system had an outage, which lasted quite into the new program year. We did not go back up until at least September. So we were unable to close out our previous year performance. So a lot of the items here are year-end, as well as this coming quarter, quarter one we just passed. So for PY21, at the end of the performance, you can see that most of the performance measures were reached. There are, however, some that we did not exceed or meet, especially with adult and disabled worker. I will remind folks that some of the performance measures, especially second quarter, employee second quarter and employee fourth quarter after exit, is still going to be in COVID period, So that's still affecting some of our performance measures because of the way that the calculations are, because they're so far removed from the executed. But for the most part, considering what we were going through for QI21, performance is pretty good. Again, one thing that some of the new board members might not know is our performance measures are negotiated every 2 years. We just went through a negotiation for QI22 and 23. Historically, New Hampshire is pretty high. Performance measures, our negotiated rates are really high compared to the rest of the country because we perform very well. So there's a give and take with that. So the better we perform, the higher our levels get. And then at some point, they're so high that we can't reach them. So I think that we're seeing some of that. We're also seeing some of the conversion with our case management system that occurred. There's a learning curve with our staff. We had the outage. There was a lot going on. But for QI21, we did not end in a bad place. And again, these numbers are not final because USDOL does a statistical analysis and they use all kinds of mathematical things that I have no idea about. But for the most part, we're in pretty decent shape.
Questions? Seeing none, we'll move to the next item.
Are we doing that good or that bad? Before we move on, Lisa, on this, on the performance, can you just speak a little anecdotally, forgive me, and again for the record, Joe Dorian, about where we kind of stand with some enrollments, especially with our partners?
Absolutely. So PY21 was a rough year all across the board for enrollments across all the core partners. We all struggled. PY22 started with an outage of our case management system. So all of our subrecipients were working on a paper, paper applications, paper documentation, outside the system. It was horrific. However, they never stopped. They never missed a beat. They kept enrolling. Dislocated worker struggled last year. There was a switch in subrecipients from to NEGS, and it took a while for them to get in the groove. Their numbers have exceeded what they did all of last year in the first quarter. They almost reached their halfway point goal for halfway through the year for this year. The adult program almost reached their year goal halfway through this program year. So their yearly goal is 260 new participants. As of December 31st of 2022, they had 250 new enrollments. So it's just been gangbusters so far. The youth program, same thing. There was a lot of front-ending of enrollments, so their enrollments are in really good shape as well. So when you have really good enrollment numbers in the fiscal part of it, you can see the difference. So we had a few years of low enrollments, which means we had a lot of carryover. So it's all kind of cyclical. Low enrollments, meaning no spending, high enrollments, so we're starting to get to the point where we're back on track. Both enrollments, performance, and fiscal. So it all kind of coincides.
And again, Madam Chair, I hope that's because, again, for the record, Joe Dorian, so we may be coming to you either with a virtual vote in the next few weeks as a board, or we might wait till June, depending on kind of where we're at. We want to do some clever financial maneuvering. The admin money that Nora spent, we're underspent in admin on our adult program, and our focus is always program participants. We run a really tight ship, low admin, you know, way below indirect cost and all that sort of stuff. Comparative, that was a fun fight last year. But we're looking, if we can, moving some of that admin money to program services, which means more people trained, more people in the workforce to fill high demand occupations that we all crucially need, whether it be oil, nursing, I'm thinking just because it's been really cold out, and all those essential services. So we're actually looking at some options. So we may be coming to the board again with a virtual vote or a vote come the June meeting to kind of approve the moving of that money around, because we don't want to see it go back to the black hole that is the federal budget, because it doesn't do anybody any good there. So just a little context for you. If you go, what is Joe and or Melissa emailing about now? A little preview of what we're trying to do, because again, we've been underspent for so long, and so we're just trying to catch up. And Donnelly isn't here. Donnelly Lozo from Southern New Hampshire Services, so I can really talk about her in a great way. Her and her team on the adult side have really, really done a great job. So our partners at Southern New Hampshire Services, so administering the adult program. So if you see her out and about, tell her that they're doing great, because they are. So.
Thank you.
If I may, I just have a quick question.
State your name, please.
Rick Bartle. Lisa, so like for example, on the adult programming here, you serve 478 participants with 312 receiving training services. The participants that didn't receive training services, what kinds of services did they receive?
So we have training services, and then we have what we call basic career services. So if somebody is in a training, that's where they're going to come in that 312. Other services are job searching, resume writing, career exploration. They might not be ready to attend a training, but they're exploring what are their interests, what are they going to be good at, and really learning about the occupation, you know, what is the high demand, what is the salary projections. They could be receiving supportive services because they're not at the point in time that they're ready to maybe engage in a training, but they need some extra support to get to that point. So there's support services, career exploration, resume writing, all of those that they consider basic career services. Some might be work-based learning. That's the new term, but on the job training, it's the same idea. That could be something that they're receiving services on as well.
Kelly Clark, for the record, one follow-up question. So the dislocated worker program, we didn't meet the measured skills gain performance metric. Can you talk a little bit about what are they doing to, you know, adapt for that,
Absolutely.
Or to adjust?
So measurable skill gains is the one performance measure that is not on a quarterly basis, but a year basis. So if an individual enrolls in training or education, they're going to get counted by the year end. So they have to have a measurable skill gain within that program year. We have historically been really high with measurable skill gains as far as reaching and attaining our level. We've kind of slipped in all the three programs in this measure. So what we did is there's a lot of training out there from USDOL, employment training, on the web. It's called Workforce GPS, if anyone cares. But basically what we did is we send out a memo to all the subrecipients, and we asked them to basically mandate a training of all new staff, because there was a lot of staff turnover, there was a lot of new staff. So we wanted to make sure that everyone had the same training, and that was just completed as of December 31st. So they took the first quarter of this program year to kind of get back into what is a measurable skill, how do I count it, what counts, and really kind of looking at how can we kind of tweak that up for all the programs.
Thank you. Should we move to the next item?
Absolutely.
Item
2E on page 100. And also I was just reminded, quick housekeeping, again for the record, Joe Dorian, as we're flipping to page 100. I know it's a very annoying item, but I know, again, thank you all for your patience when it comes to the financial disclosure forms. I think we're waiting on a few from some of you all, and I think we did paper copies, so just make sure to please fill that out. And again, if you've already done that, I'm so sorry. The Secretary of State's website is something to be desired. So we are, again, focused on being, you know, compliant on everything, and that's just something as board members to make sure. So again, I thank you for your patience. I know a few of you, they lost them across the street, so that's why we're trying to make copies of them, keep them on file, so when they say we don't have them, we can immediately then provide it, so then you're not bothered again. So again, I was just reminded of that. So again, thank you for your patience on that. And just please, if we put a paper out, just hand it to myself and Melissa on the way out. That'd be great. But item 2E is a program performance update. Back to Lisa.
Hi, Lisa Gerard. Just to back up on the 2D, A through, I don't know what letter it goes through, I think it's C. Those are program narratives that all the sub-recipients send at the year-end. They're year-end narratives. And it also includes not only the year-end narrative, but the year-end performance. So I just wanted to kind of point that out. There really isn't anything to explain. Just wanted to kind of explain where those come from. So item 2E, so this is the same thing that I just talked about from program year end. This is for PY 22 quarter one. Quarter one was from July 1st through September 30th, which is pretty much the entire time we were on an outage, and then we were dealing with a backlog. So we had extensions for our performance measures. We had multiple extensions from USCOL because of the system outage and then the backlog. That will be a story for another day. That was fun. So performance measures, they're the same performance measures that we have for all of the performance measures. You'll see that measurable skill gains is not going to be met for the first quarter because, again, it's a year performance measure. So we're never going to meet that until the fourth quarter, but they still count it every quarter. Again, you will see most noticeably is that the deployment second and fourth quarter is not being met or exceeded. Again, it's that COVID period of time. So, again, it seems to be, will come out of that eventually. It's just still showing up in performance. The other thing that I'll say about performance is we have our performance goals that we need to meet per USCOL, but OO is under the kind of direction, per se, that we need to meet our performance measures, but participants are really the ultimate end goal. So if we're enrolling 250 individuals in one 6-month period, we know that performance might dip a little bit. And that's okay because we're helping all those individuals. So far, we're doing really good, I think, on performance, especially given that we dealt with an outage and a backlog. Because I can't tell you how much data entry that backlog really is up. It was insane. Our subrecipients worked nights, weekends, around the clock, trying to get the backlog in, because we still had to report to USCOL. It was literally a nightmare. So if you see anyone from Southern, Minturn, JAG, NEGS, just be kind to them. They really hung in there, and it was really difficult to deal with.
So. Any further questions? Let's go to 2F, the VIP report.
Very good. And before 2F, get to the record show, Dorian, we did, from the board, actually utilizing board funds, some small tokens of appreciation to our subrecipients, specifically Southern New Hampshire Services and their team on the adult program. Because again, we have not had this in like pretty much modern history where we are at where we're at in terms of enrollments. Again, you know, the money does no good if it's just sitting there. We're actively working to deploy it, but also to deploy it to different groups of people that may not have had access to that. So just as an FYI, we did do some stuff. We did some Lindt chocolate to our youth sub-recipients and the adult program, just because they had some real tough times. But 2F is going on that about our VIP grant performance update. And I'll kick it back over to Lisa.
Lisa Gerard, again, for record. We did a VIP grant RFP, I think there's some board members that remember the RFP and that were on the scoring committee. This was a request for proposal to really reach out to historically marginalized communities. And we had a variety listed in the RFP that that subrecipients could choose to work with. We ended up, the SWIB ended up giving two grant awards, one to the International Institute of New England and the other to Southern New Hampshire Services. This grant is specifically a referral grant process, so it's working with individuals in historically marginalized communities doing outreach and referrals to the adult program. International Institute of New England has already met their goal for their deliverables. They've been really hitting the ground running. Between the VIP program and the adult program, that's where you're going to see all those enrollments. So as long as they're giving good referrals, those individuals get goals. So that's the increased enrollment as well. So the International Institute of New England has really done a tremendous job. They are actually working with a couple different agencies as well for new Americans, immigrants, and refugees. They also, the outreach is to businesses to see if we can entice other businesses to hire new Americans, immigrants, and refugees. And then once they come into the adult program, they receive all the services that are under the adult WIOA program, including support services. We are also doing some graduate education. Second Start, which is one of our adult education, they're running a program for graduate education. So we're able to kind of tap into other resources. Southern New Hampshire Services is taking a little different road. They're working with many different communities, historically marginalized communities. They're not focused on one. And they're doing a lot of outreach and referrals back to the adult program. So they've been working, both programs have been working really hard on trying to create processes and procedures for this, the first quarter, second quarter of the grant process, and working well together. So International Institute and Southern have worked really well together, and they have ongoing meetings on trying to figure out the best processes to put in place to do the referrals and the outreach. So, we just wanted to give you an update on this grant in particular because it's really going really well. And you'll see a success story, which is to something. There's a success story from the International Institute as well, talking about one of the program participants that got referred. So we just wanted to highlight what's going on with that grant.
Kelly Clark, follow-up question. Are the two, Southern and International Institute, at all working together or coordinating or leveraging each other's services?
Absolutely. So they had worked well together before this project. They had worked on a program with Manchester Community College called LNA Success, where the three programs basically were taking a cohort of individuals from the International Institute and making sure that they have the basic language skills needed, getting them into WIOA programming, but also getting them into an LNA training program at Manchester Community College. So they had already kind of had a working relationship, but they've been working even closer together. They have they have ongoing meetings where they're working on processes. They're trying to explain, you know, because WIOA have a lot of rules and regulations, and there's time and commitment. And so both agencies are working on trying to make sure that everyone understands what the roles are of each organization. So it's been, I really think it's been a really great partnership. And the whole, one of the purposes of the grant was to create partnerships that were going to last long after the grant expires. And I think that this partnership between the International Institute and Southern is something that's going to keep going way beyond which is exciting and new. And it can just open up a whole new door for all kinds of individuals. So they've been working great together.
Great. Thank you for that. Seeing no further questions, we'll go to the next item, which is the annual monitoring report.
Yep. And, again, for the record, Joe Dorian. Item 2G is again Lisa. And it involves you, Madam Chair.
Yes, it does.
Lisa Gerard, again, for the record. So again, one of the items that we could not get on the June split agenda because of the backlog, because of the performance being delayed, was our annual monitoring. We call it a binder. It's a huge binder. But it's our annual monitoring that Kelly comes over and looks through and signs off on. So we were not able to get that done because of the backlog and the delay in reporting our all of our findings to USDOL. We had to finish up some monitoring. The monitoring report is included. I will note that there is one outstanding item that has not been cleared up. It's a federal audit review item from our WIOA programmatic review in November of 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a long time. We've been going back and forth with USDOL on the finding. I think, crossing my fingers, that we finally might have solved it to their satisfaction. But everything else, any corrective action or outstanding issue was resolved. We did a lot of monitoring activities, UI-21. We finally were back on site for most of our on site monitoring. There were some due to COVID outbreaks or staff having COVID that we didn't go on site and we did virtual. But it was the first year that we actually got back on site and did some actual in-person monitoring, which it was really nice to get on site and use that. So the report is there. Kelly, did you want to talk about anything? Or?
No, Kelly Clark, just a follow-up question. Can you talk just a little bit about the finding, which I believe had to do with the sole source process, and just so people have some background context?
Sure. And Joe, I'm going to let you jump in as well because it's our favorite topic.
Because you want to see my blood pressure go up.
Yes. So during the programmatic review for WIOA back in November 2021, one of our findings was about the one-stop operator procurement. And that's the one-stop operator is basically how here in New Hampshire we run the New Hampshire Works offices. We have a one-stop operator. We sole sourced it. It's the consortium runs the one-stop operator. And basically, NHES is the quote-unquote landlord. They have the buildings, and then the consortium oversees the one-stop operator. USDOL did not like the idea that we sole sourced the one-stop operator procurement, even though under WIOA legislation, it allows the state to sole source in specific situations. So therefore, we have been going back and forth with USDOL since November of 2021 on this topic, trying to basically state our point and our position with them not liking the fact that we did it that way. So finally, to resolve the issue, we did release an RFI, which is request for information. It's not a request for proposal. We're not asking for anyone to, we're not going to do a contract or anything, but we did release a request for information regarding what could somebody else do, basically, is what it comes down to. The RFI closes this week. It was published on DASC as well as NewHampshireWorks.org, which is where we publish all of our RFIs or RFPs. So hopefully by just publishing the RFI, we have resolved the issue with USDOL. We're waiting for the official response to close in the item. Do you want to say anything else?
So, for the record, Joe Dorian, we had a really fun time with that review. They don't call it an audit, right? It makes it seem a little bit more friendly if it's a review, although it's a team of auditors. So riddle me that, I guess. And so we contend, and we still contend, that first of all, we've done nothing wrong. You know, I don't even think it should be a finding, but again, I don't work for U.S. Department of Labor. who might be reading these transcripts later, so that should be interesting. But, you know, in the legislation for WIOA, it clearly states that states have an opportunity to sole source procurement of a one-stop operator, black and white. Don't have to be a trained lawyer or a legal expert or a member of the United States Congress to figure that out. It's pretty plain. If I can figure that out, anybody can. So we have historically always done that because every state operates differently. As a state, we are a single state entity. We have a single state board. Massachusetts has like 8 state workforce innovation boards, or equivalent. The state of Delaware, on their board, has like 57 people, which I talked to their executive director. It's very, very interesting. Yeah, 57. We need a bigger room. Every state gets the opportunity to do things a little bit differently. As long as it's in compliance. And we exercised that for a number of years. So we've been doing that for like almost 30 years. So for them to kind of finally say, hey, what you're doing was kind of took us a little bit by surprise. And we were kind of upset, quite frankly, because our one-stop operator, it's a consortium, a number of entities that make that up. Commissioner Capatis, who's normally here, our partners in Employment Security, Department of Education, Health and Human Services, BEA, a number of folks, because not one state agency or entity can provide all the services that we provide, right? That's why we work together, right? There's not one single state agency or entity in any state that provides all that. It's, again, that partnership. So we contend, and we still contend, that, you know, we have a state agency, New Hampshire Employment Security, who operates 12 one-stop centers across the state. They are strategically located geographically. They are handicap accessible. We have invested millions of dollars of federal and general funds into making these buildings modern, from everything from, you know, internet, utilities, you know, ADA compliant, you know, everything that makes an office run, right? So we've invested heavily. We have also, you know, a bunch of marketing materials. People know where they are, right? Essentially, we contended that we're not going to essentially lay off an entire state agency to go through some exercise of futility, because nobody can do it better than Free. They already do that. They are required by law, they being New Hampshire Employment Security, to run physical locations to provide unemployment insurance. So why are we going to... So my argument I kept saying to them as they continued to speak bureaucrat at me, and I go, who can do better than Free? They go, that's not the point. And I'm like, well, that to me is the point. Like, you know, nobody can do it better. Like, if we brought in a private entity, they'd charge. And our admin costs would go through the roof, and we'd serve less participants, and we'd have a huge layoff where we'd have to have Jimmy do a rapid response at a state agency, which is not what we want to have happen. And we just knew the realities that, you know, nobody would allow that to happen. So for us, we think it's very silly, something out of Monty Python. We try to have good humor about it, but if that's the worst, and it's funny because it gets me riled up because we've been doing it for so long. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, that's not always a good reason, but I think we demonstrated through our ability in arguing in favor of the one stop of the sole source procurement. So that's the one finding, Madam Chair, that we had, and I'm going to check my Fitbit later, and it's going to show my heart rate spike, but. So
thanks.
Sorry if I
no,
if
thanks
over,
for the background. Yeah. I think it's helpful for everyone. Questions?
Yeah, just more of a comment.
Oops.
But
can you state your name for the record, please?
Yeah, sorry. I'm the director of Oak Rehab. Just for the board's information, I've been around for like 20 years now, and this issue has come up at every monitor. Just so you guys don't think this is some unique issue that has come up in this past one. It's been an issue all along, and I think the best point of argument for it is the administrative costs and the number of customers that can be served, because at the end of the day, that's why we're all here. I just thought that would be interesting for the board to know that it's not a unique issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks so much for that background. Yeah. Any other questions? Shall we move to 2A subcommittee reports?
I'm very happy to stop talking about that. item 2H just serves an opportunity for the subcommittee chairs, Madam Chair, to introduce themselves and provide any updates. We do not have a chair of the review committee because we kind of cycle people on and off based on just for situational awareness where if there may be a conflict or a perceived conflict, we just ask different board members to not score that specific RFP round to avoid any appearance or conflict of interest. So we have two other committees, and I know Mayor Brown's here. I don't want to put Mayor Brown on the spot, but maybe introduce and just say hi, just so people get to know the folks working on different things.
All right, so I'm Mayor Brown. I'm the chair of the Education, Training, and Steering Committee. Rick is one of our members, and Shane Long is the other member. And we talked, we met on January 11th, and we Joe was there and shared some program, year-end fiscal responsibility, talked a lot about the funding streams for WIOA, explained the process of offering support and partnership to obtain DOL grant funding. Rick had asked about some educational partners for some of this funding, and Joe explained the collaborative efforts with hospitals and other entities that can work together. We also, I had talked about a new program that LRCC is getting ready to launch. That is a robotics program that they're getting ready to roll out. I don't know at this point if that's been approved yet. It's looking to be a kind of feeder program into Plymouth State. So we in Franklin have been working on trying to beef up our manufacturing interest in the high school. We have some major manufacturers, PCC Structural, Watts, Vitex, all of whom are international companies. And we're working very hard with a new high school principal who hopefully next week John and I will be working with to roll out some of the opportunities for our students there. Joe also talked about using some discretionary funding for an RFP to be released.
More to come.
Yeah, more and more to come on that. Yeah, let me just say that. I was elected as board chair. It was amazing when you got three in a room and two stand back. I volunteered for it in all fairness to my fellow members. Next meeting, which we're going to have in we're going to be talking about some current bridges between students and college and career pathways. That is huge for our school in Franklin. We are a low economic group up there, and it's a challenge. It's a real challenge, and we have to develop pathways, roadways, highways, however you want to describe it, for our kids to realize that there's life beyond working at McDonald's for all of your life. And that seems to be a sentiment that is pervasive in our area. We've got over 65% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. One of the things that we want to work with and that Joe and I are hopefully going to be working with our principal. And this could be something that, if we can get it right, maybe could be applicable in some other areas, perhaps in the northern country, is to try to bring in the parents of those students that are probably either underemployed or not employed. One of the issues that we've run into, and I know several other school districts have, is the funding that's available through FAFSA. The parents won't fill out the forms because they don't want to release their funding sources, or even if they have them. And so that's another initiative that the legislature was looking at last year. We're also going to be talking about how technology changes have affected the workforce landscape and recruiting for remote workers. That is all part of that, housing, cost-associated drug issues, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a good meeting, and I'm looking forward to working. I think we've got a good team with some really, really good experience going forward that maybe we can make some headway in one of these little towns in Franklin. Thank you.
Any other chair, I think?
I'm here.
Oh.
So I, just like Joe's committee, I'm over the, can you remind me of the formal name? You don't have the subcommittee. But the Workforce Development Policy Committee, did I get it? Okay. I was voted chair. Like you said, when there's three and you...
two stand back.
or everybody's quiet, right? So I'm going to have to really bulk up my report for next time, though, because Joe's kind of showing me up.
So. No, I'm not. Melissa, it's her fault.
She wrote it for me. Well, I'm fortunate that we have had two nice meetings sort of introducing ourselves. Joe's been giving his reports at the meetings. And we focused on two things that
we thought might be helpful training and policy issues for the state for the SWIP. The first was mental health in the workplace resources, which I think is really important for every business, whether you're small, big, doesn't matter. So I've been pulling together some resources from the national landscape as well as our local New Hampshire NAMI organization to hopefully have sort of some options for us to share, maybe kind of a menu of services, if you will, that we could provide to businesses in New Hampshire. The other area that we've been doing research on and finding resources for was municipality training, because there's a lot of municipalities around the state. One of our board members is a selectman, and he said, you know, we don't get training on anything, and we have the funding available to do it. So I've been kind of pulling again some national resources, and also Massachusetts had some interesting ways that they're doing safety training, you know, almost anything you could think of that a town might need for resources there. So hoping to kind of pull together some best of the best, if you will, that we can share around the state. So that would be my report.
Yes.
Joe Brown, just a question. For some of your municipal training, the New Hampshire Municipal Association has a lot of pre-online training specifically focused, one of them specifically focused for first-time counselors, select people, townspeople like that, NHMA, and New Hampshire Municipal Association. NHMA.
Thank you. That's great.
Great suggestion.
Tim.
Hey, Tim Sinton, the director. I just wanted to mention, you mentioned about mental health training for employers, and we're working with Riverbend Mental Health, and they offer a certification program for very low dollars, and it's a high value for what employers can get out of it.
Great.
And have to talk more about that. We'd be wanting to be hosting a couple of their programs for certification in mental health awareness month, which is May.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. Good chat.
Other questions? Subcommittee chairs.
Shannon Reed, I just have a comment for Mayor Brown's report out. You talked about the FAFSA and the unwillingness of many families to fill that out. And the legislature did enact a law that I think as of maybe next spring is going to require FAFSA completion as a graduation requirement. For high school students, there's an opt-out provision on that, and it's unclear to me how that's going to go over the whole thing. But that's an interesting kind of potential change in the landscape.
I had Joe Brown again. I hadn't heard on that. One of the things that we were hoping it was going to get through was that if you were on Medicaid, that you might be able to get for whatever was going to be as part of the lunch program. You know, the state, I think, they looked at if you're on Medicaid, you would automatically be enrolled in free and reduced lunch. You wouldn't have to fill out the paperwork for that. That same kind of thinking was hopefully going to be sort of lined up with a FAFSA people that don't want to do it, because a lot of times, they don't know what they don't know, and it's not as if they're going to go back three generations, you know, to the Hatfield and McCoy, you know, situation that got you in this current situation now. It was more of an education thing, but it didn't go into it, I think. But thank you for letting me know. I'll follow up on that.
No further questions. Do you want to go to the success stories?
Yeah. For the record, Joe Jordan. Little typo there. 2I, page 111. The success stories are written. As Lisa mentioned, you know, we have great performance data to demonstrate that we're doing what the funds require us to do. We're doing them very well. But I think it's important that you really, really read these success stories to understand kind of who we're helping and who we're serving, to provide that narrative. It's more than just numbers, facts, and figures. We're hoping at the June 6th meeting to have several program participants. We did this, 2 years ago, I think it was. And I think a few board members, I think a few folks were there. You know, I'll have tissues because, a few, they're pretty emotional. So you'll be able to ask questions and interact with them. So, you know, that's what we're looking forward to for the June meeting, which, you know, again, please never miss a meeting, but please don't miss that one. But we're happy to I'm happy to entertain any questions you may have about the success stories that are provided in 2I.
Questions or observations for Joe?
Yes. Rick Bartle, for the record. I'm curious, and it may be in some of the stories, I haven't worked my way through all of them yet, but I'd love to know how New Hampshire Works got connected with these folks. And that's a sort of an, you know, rhetorical question, I guess, for a later date, perhaps.
Lisa Gerard, again, for the record. It really depends on which program you're referring to. So I can tell you historically, youth programming, a lot of youth, especially the OSY, which is out of school youth, they're referred back to the program from somebody else who's gone through it. So they have a friend of a friend of a friend. Hey, I went through my terms, microelectronics boot camp, I'm working at EA and I'm making all this bank, you should go there too. The dislocated worker program, their kind of catchment because they're working with dislocated workers are coming through the NHES program, especially unemployment. So they're doing a ton of outreach through letters, flyers, all kinds of things that they're tapping into NHES claims. With the adult program, they're coming from everywhere. So they're coming from the VIP referral. OO has been doing a lot more outreach. We've been much more forward-facing. So anytime we have an opportunity to talk about the programs and what we're doing, we're out there. So we've been really aligning the adult program, which is kind of where most people fit, that if they don't fit in the youth or the dislocated worker, they're going to fit in the adult. So we've been doing a lot more outreach, and they're coming that way. The adult works with NEGP. They work with DHHS. They're working with all kinds of different organizations. And sometimes it's just word of mouth. Sometimes it's walking into the New Hampshire Works office, and somebody will go to the front desk and be like, I don't have a job, I need training. And then that person at that front desk kind of triages and gets into the right individual. But that's kind of many of the ways that they enter.
Thanks, Liz.
Shannon, just kind of follow up on Shannon Reed. Do you use these stories to kind of evangelize, you know, in the locations where people are walking in, or the other ways that you do outreach? I mean, it seems like these are real people, and they're seen as peers, I think, by other real people in their circles. And as you mentioned word of mouth, and I know somebody who did this. It seems like amplifying that would be a really good strategy.
Absolutely. Lisa Gerard again. So the subrecipients do utilize their success stories as well as material. If you look at like New Hampshire JAG or My Turn, they'll have a ton of photos about their participant. They have some like little blurbs. It's absolutely something that we want to do more marketing on a state level, and that's in the works, hopefully, to be able to really hone in on what the program is about. And it's not just about going to the training. It's about a career path and a change. And it's really about these individuals having these new opportunities to be self-sufficient. So I think it's something that we're working towards. We're not there yet with all of it. But we know what we have in these. And we definitely want to utilize them to the best ability.
Thank you, Lisa. Any questions? All right, I think are we done the next section?
Yep.
So we'll move on to board motions and discussion. And I don't believe, Joe, am I correct, there's no formal motions that you have to put for the board at this time?
Correct, Madam Chair.
So we'll accept, if there
as any discussion topics from the board?
Yep.
Anything else that anyone would like to bring up or consider? So now we'll move to closing. So this will conclude our formal meeting of the Workforce Board, State Workforce Innovation Board. The meeting has been recorded and run in accordance with RSA 91A. And I really appreciate everyone's participation today and questions, and look forward to seeing everyone on, I believe, June 6th, and really look forward to the success stories in person. So thank you, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. No problem.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. 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 It's unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah.